Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Hello and welcome. We're going to be talking about ending relationship conflicts on today's show. The numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can phone us on 001-760-918-4300. You know, one of the probably most famous prayers of the 20th century was the Serenity Prayer, which is usually attributed to Reinhold Niebuhr, and it goes a bit like this. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And while there's always going to be aspects of our life that we find easier or more difficult to greet with courage and acceptance, the area where I find that most people, and I'm going to include myself in that most people, continually struggle to find the wisdom to know the difference is in our personal relationships. And so if you want to create more serenity in your relationships, you really have to start to focus on certain things consistently. And one of the main things is to focus on your responsibility within the relationship, what is within your control, and not get caught up or bogged down in what you'd like to change in the other person. And over the course of the show, I'm going to be sharing a number of different tips and models that you can use to both look at your own relationships, to work with yourself, and you can also, if you're working with a partner on just creating more harmony, more serenity, and more love in your relationships, these will all be things that you can do. And also, I'll be taking your calls. The numbers again are 1-866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. So, few things just to get started. One of my favorite books on the origins and nature of the sort of various conflicts we get into in our relationships is called Dinosaur Brains by Albert Bernstein and Sidney Kraft Rosen. And in it, the authors, they outline sort of a 7 universal traits which are hardwired into our limbic system, into our nervous system as human beings. And these are the 7 sort of animal drives that tend to get triggered in relationship with others. And so by becoming more aware of these in yourself, you can begin to not fall for it, not think, oh, this is real, this is serious, I must actually, this is important, and just go, oh, it's my limbic system. Oh, it's just my old animal fight, flight, fright response kicking in. And I can stand back from that. And I'll give you a few ways before we're done to sort of pull back from that, reconnect with your higher self, your higher functioning brain, your sort of front brain, so that you can begin to resolve conflicts in a more rational way, which if you've ever been in a relationship conflict, and I'm assuming if you're human you have, you know is not the easiest thing to do. So the first of the 7 traits is get it now. So if you find yourself feeling incredibly impulsive, I've got to have this now, I've got it now, it's got to be now. That can be a hallmark of executive brilliance, but it's more often an early warning sign of impending doom, because the more aroused or stoned on adrenaline, essentially, that you become, the more impulsive you become. And the more impulsive you become, the more aroused you become. And the more aroused you become, the more impulsive you become. And that impulsiveness often leads to saying things, doing things, that very often it can take years to undo within a relationship. A second trait that's sort of hardwired is what the authors call the 3 F's, but fight, flight, or fright. So whenever you sense danger, you go into one of 3 modes. Again, based on this sudden massive increase in the production of your internal drug factory. And you get all this extra adrenaline, and that can either give you this temporary super strength to fight. If you've ever heard the story of, like, the young mother lifting the car off the baby, you know, there's a lot of stories like that. I don't know how many of them are real, how many of them are urban myth, but there's no question that there's an incredible super extra strength that comes with that rush of adrenaline. Super speed to run, or if you find yourself unable to cope, it can also kind of make you super stupid and immobilize you. And literally that overdose of adrenaline can shut down your ability to think or act. It literally shuts off that front brain. Now, the third trait is to be dominant. So again, these are things that you can notice in yourself, things that mean that you've gotten triggered, that you're not actually sensibly putting your point forward anymore, but you've gone into that animal, that limbic system, and you're just responding from there. And that's the urge to be dominant. And it's the same. I mean, if you study cattle or wolves or large corporations, you'll see the same patterns of one-upmanship and politicking and alliance shifting and battles, or in business they're called campaigns for leadership. And if you think back to the last time you started a new job, how long did it take you to find your place in the pecking order? Or maybe if you were in a group of people, how long did it take you to find where you fit in the hierarchy? And maybe even in your intimate relationships. You know, are you top dog, bottom dog? Does it change? Or are you able to kind of keep a balance where it doesn't get fixated on the hierarchy, on where you stand, on who's in charge? So fourth thing, so we've got get it now. We've got the three F's, fight, flight, or fright. And the third thing is be dominant. And then the fourth is to defend your territory. So if you find yourself, you know, I want to, you know, this is mine. And it might be something just like a parking attendant tickets your car and you see them sort of protecting their space. It's like, you know, you're not going to park here on my patch, buddy. But those same issues of territoriality cause the conflicts we have in our relationships and the conflicts that we see in the world. You know, it's that same dynamic, that same animal urge, that same limbic system trigger that says, you must defend your territory. Well, must you? Really? Now? Is your territory really being threatened? See, these are the things when you can pull back, you can begin to look at these situations differently, you can begin to think about them differently. Another thing, and this obviously is very directly related to relationships, is get the mate. So, you know, in the office, this might be the office romance, you know, which is less common nowadays because of sexual harassment litigation, but the irresistible urge to show off in front of cute people is unlikely to ever go away because it's hardwired in our nervous system. Again, even if you're happily married, even if you're happily in a relationship, that's just a hardwired thing. And once you recognize that for yourself, first off, you can cut yourself some slack and not take it so seriously. But if you recognize that in your partner, you know, provided they're not doing anything about it, the fact that they're looking just means that they're alive. Okay, now the sixth thing is if it hurts, hiss. So blaming and complaining are a bit like drinking alcohol. It can feel pretty good at the time, but if you do too much of it, you're going to feel like hell in the morning. And if you've ever seen a child throw a tantrum or you've heard a dog whimper, you've seen this trait in action, that when you're in pain, you strike out. You make sound to let it be known that you're in pain. And again, this is just hardwired. Seventh trait, hardwired trait, is like me is good, not like me is bad. So in the world of the sort of corporate or relationship lizard, you can divide the people into potential allies, potential predators, or potential prey. And that's going to be true, again, in corporations, with gangs on the street, with gangs in the boardroom, with gangs of friends. The urge to gravitate towards people who appear to be like you is as common as it is fallible, because people can then use that to manipulate you, and also you can miss out on a whole lot of people who maybe don't seem to be like you when you first meet them, but there's actually all sorts of other wonderful things that you could learn from being with them and spending time with them. So again, I'll run down that list again. If you find yourself getting caught up in, I gotta have this now, in the three F's, in fight, flight, or fright, in trying to establish your dominance in the hierarchy, in defending your territory, in getting the mate, showing off for the cute people around you, in hissing when you get hurt, and in only gravitating towards the people who seem to be like you and sort of resisting being around people who don't seem to be like you, then you're caught up in that part of your nervous system, in that limbic system, in the animal brain. And the solution is actually pretty simple. And the first thing is to just stop. To interrupt that pattern of conflict, to interrupt that limbic system response. And you can do that by counting to 10 or thinking a happy thought, whatever you need to do to slow down and interrupt the pattern. But the way that I suggest doing it is to just breathe into your heart. So you can do this right now. Just whatever you're doing, just breathe into your heart. Maybe just take 3 breaths into your heart. And that just in and of itself will interrupt the pattern. And you can think a happy thought. You can think about somebody that you love or someone that loves you. And what happens is when you sort of reconnect to the heart governor, once your limbic system slows down, your frontal cortex kicks back in. That front part of your brain kicks in. And you regain the ability to think. And a quick glance at the big picture, in most cases, is going to allow you to focus on what you really want in your relationship. and to evaluate whether what you were about to do, when you were going to strike out or be dominant or defend your territory or show off or whatever it was, whether that really would bring you closer to sort of relationship serenity and well-being in your relationships, or whether it would take you further away from your goals and dreams. So I'd love to talk to you more about conflicts in your own relationships and coach you through ways that you can resolve them. The numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. And we'll be taking your calls and also be sharing more tips and ideas about ending relationship conflicts. You're listening to You Can Have What You Want. I'm Michael Neal.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Welcome back to the show. We are talking about ending relationship conflicts. And if you want to talk about conflicts in your relationship or anything else related to relationships, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. You know, I was think about the various things that I've tried, either with myself, with clients, to really create that sense of serenity around relationships that makes them more joy and less hell. There's the famous Sartre quote, you know, hell is other people. And when you get two unhappy people together, two people who are triggered, who are caught up in their autonomic nervous system, in their limbic system, and those responses, hell can be other people. When you get two people who are in their hearts, well, heaven's only a heartbeat away. And I've got a friend, a meditation teacher named Mike George, and one of the things that he said once that really struck me is he said, the moment you become upset with someone, it means you're trying to control them. And that sort of points to what I found to be one of the most useful principles in creating relationship serenity for yourself, and that's to make the relationship more important than the result. I had a client who was telling me about a breakthrough in a relationship with her husband, who for years she'd been trying to get him to stop or at least cut back on his smoking to no avail. And over the last few months, she'd grown more and more frustrated with him, and her frustration had begun creating a strain in the relationship. In other words, she was trying to control him. Now, with the best of all possible intentions, but that's what the source of the upset was. And finally, after we talked it through and a lot of soul searching, she decided to let it go. That to the best of her ability, she was going to make her love for him more important than getting him to change his behavior. And within days, he said to her, you know, I've decided I don't want to smoke anymore. And he hasn't smoked since. Now, more importantly for her, they became closer after that than they had been at any point before that in their marriage. Now, that's not to say that this is always going to work as a tactic. If you go, okay, I'm going to control him by pretending to let go, or I'm going to control her by acting as if I don't care anymore. It's really just a decision that you make on the inside that I'm going to make the relationship, I'm going to make my love for this person more important than getting them to behave in a certain way that I'd like. And whenever you do that, what you're really deciding in some ways is you'd rather be happy than right. That you prefer the serenity that comes with letting people be how they are to the continual strain of attempting to force them to conform to some ideal of how they should behave. If you want to try that for yourself, just choose a specific relationship to explore. And it can be any relationship you'd like to enhance. Some people find it easier to begin with a relationship that's working well, and other people get more benefit from like diving right into a relationship in conflict. And assume that you're human, and that you've been trying in various ways to control the other person to get what you want. Which methods have you been using? You know, what have you been doing to control them? Have you been pouting? Have you been giving them the silent treatment? Have you been yelling at them? Have you been being particularly nice to them? And then once you kind of figure out what you've been doing to try to get them to behave in the way that you want, just evaluate how effective have you been. And then ask yourself this. Would you be willing to make the quality of this relationship more important than the results you've been after? And if you just do that and you make that decision, you're going to find that relationship begins to transform. Now, another thing that you can do is you can shift your focus from what you want from the other person to what you want for them. When you focus on getting what you want from the people in your life, inevitably you get caught up in trying to make them change so you can get it. And you might do this by trying to bully them. You know, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to make your life a living hell. Or you could bribe them. You know, if you give me what I want, I'm really going to love you. Wink, nudge, flirtatious smile. Or my personal favorite is to guilt trip them. If you love me, you do what I want. Sulk, sulk, sulk. Now, when you switch your focus from what you want from the other person to what you want for the other person, you get in touch with your love, not your lack. It's a shift from complaint to compassion, from trying to make other people give you what you want to supporting them in getting something that they want. So, for example, if what you want from them is, well, I want them to love me. Well, what do you want for them? Maybe it's I want them to be happy. If what you want from them is, well, I want them to initiate sex. Well, maybe that becomes I want them to feel free to really enjoy sex. If what you want from them is to calm down, well, maybe what you want for them is that they feel safe and they feel well enough in themselves. I don't know. I want them to stop complaining. What would that be? That might be, I want them to really enjoy their life. And again, if you're wondering whether you've really made a shift from controlling to loving, just test your revised wants against the simple question. Do I want for myself what I say I want for them? And if you do, well, chances are that's an authentic desire for them. And if not, that's just you get a little bit cleverer at manipulating them. So again, if you want a practical action step with this, just make a list of everything you can think of that you want from the relationship. And then one by one, go down the list and transform each of the wants into something you want for them. And that's naturally going to get you in touch with your genuine care and genuine affection for them. And again, the test that your wants are guided by love is anything you want for them is something you would also want for yourself. Now, a third thing is to start with a clean slate every time. The philosopher Heraclitus said, you can never step in the same river twice. And I think my own best lesson in this was I went through a phase a few months back where everything that one particular friend of mine said or did annoyed me. And even like little things, which I wouldn't have noticed if anyone else had done them, drove me nuts. And I was talking about that with a friend, and they pointed out that I was acting as if each little annoying act was cumulative. That is, you know, and another thing, and another thing, and one more thing in a long chain of unpleasant events. So rather than keeping a tally sheet of indiscretions, what my friend suggested is, why don't I start with a clean slate each time that I got together with this other person? In short, meet them each time as if for the first time. And I struggled with that idea for ages because, you know, well, I mean, wouldn't starting with a clean slate mean that they would continue taking advantage of me? Well, I decided to give it a try. And to my surprise, I found that it actually was relatively easy to just clean the slate between visits. And within days, I started remembering why my friend was my friend. And before long, I didn't even need to remind myself to wipe the slate clean. So again, this is something you want to try out for yourself. And again, it really will help you in ending relationship conflict. Choose a specific relationship to practice it in. And it can be the one, you know, you've explored in some of these other exercises I've given you. But just in whatever relationship it is, for the next 7 days, let each interaction that you have with that person begin with a clean slate. As if it's the first time you've ever met. You have no idea how they'll behave. So we're talking about ending relationship conflicts. If you want to get in and talk about something that's going on in your own relationships, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. But let me share some more things because there's so many wonderful strategies out there and wonderful resources to end relationship conflicts. One of my favorites is in a book called The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. And he's written, it's sort of what like Chicken Soup for the Soul, where there's a lot of variations, five love languages at work, five love languages for Christians, five love languages here and there. But essentially, he lays out that there are essentially five ways that people feel loved. And when you become aware of the difference between, because often it's very different in a couple, between how you feel loved and what makes your partner feel loved, you can end a lot of relationship conflicts right there. So those five things. One is words of affirmation. So people whose primary love language is words of affirmation just like to be told that they're loved and why they're loved and how much they're loved. And if people often accuse you of being gushy, it may be that that's your primary love language. And so the sort of key sentence here is, if you really loved me, you'd tell me that you loved me. Now the second love language is quality time. So the key to quality time is togetherness. So that's time spent not only in the proximity of loved ones, but in mutual engagement. That might be quality conversation, shared projects, or even just watching TV together in the evenings. So again, the sentence that would really resonate with you or your partner, if this is them, is, if you really love me, you'd spend more time with me. The third love language is receiving gifts. Now, a gift can be as expensive as a diamond ring for a lover, or as priceless as a drawing from your child. But for me, the greatest gift my wife gives me is when she takes the time to dress or speak or act in ways that she knows I like, even though it might not be the way that she would dress, speak, or act on her own. And you might begin to guess this is one that's relevant for me. And again, the sentence here is, if you really loved me, you wouldn't wait until my birthday to buy me presents and give me stuff. Now, the fourth is acts of service. And when I first heard that some people feel most loved when their partner helps out with the washing up, I actually thought that that was just a clever ruse perpetrated by my wife to trick me into taking out the trash more often. But further reading and reflection has revealed that actually helping out helps, whether it's with work around the house or the work that pays for the house. And again, the key sentence here is, if you really loved me, you'd help out more around here. And the last thing is physical touch, the fifth language. More than just sex, people whose primary love language is physical touch are the huggers and cuddlers of the world. And not only is touchy-feely not a dirty word to you if you physical touch is your love language, you're the unquestioned expert at literally keeping in touch. And you say things like, if you really loved me, you'd be all over me. So what I'm going to encourage you to do is play with those love languages in your own. Find out what your partner's is. Is it words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, or physical touch? And bring more. Speak to them in the language they understand. If you want to get in the next segment, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. 1-866-254-1579. And I'll see you after the break.
2, 3, hey! Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Welcome back. We're talking about ending relationship conflicts on today's show. And if you want to call in to talk about what's going on in your relationships, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach us on 001-760-918-4300. And let's go to the phone. Let's talk to Kelly in Fort Lauderdale. Kelly, welcome to the show. Hello, Kelly. Going once.
Can you hear me?
Hey, hello there. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
So what can I do for you today?
I'm a little nervous, but I'll tell you. Basically, the problem is I've been in a relationship for over 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
With the same person. We're not married, and it hadn't bothered me at first, but you know, now I really kind of want to, you know, make the relationship more, you know, I want to get married basically and kind of move things along.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel, you know, I don't think he's on the same page basically. He's a little younger than I am. He's 8 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
And you know, everything's been kind of going along, and then you realize, wow, you know, we've been together this whole time, and nothing's really changing. And I guess I'm just feeling very kind of stagnant, and I want to see where he's at.
Okay, so this may sound an odd question, but why are you talking to me instead of him about this?
I don't know.
Because I can't tell you what's going on in his head.
Right.
I mean, you know, I could make something up and it might be plausible. But what I'm the reason I ask that isn't because I'm really saying, ha ha, you know, what are you? I'm just, very often that's indicative of that there's a communication thing going on, that there's a notion in communication. I talk about sometimes the bricks of silence, that something goes unsaid. And whenever something's strongly felt but not said, it's like a brick that goes up between you. And the more things that go unsaid, or the more times those things go unsaid, those become the bricks in a wall. And eventually, you know, that becomes the wall that people go, hey, we used to have this wonderful connection, and now it's like there's a wall between us.
I guess that's really what's happening, because whenever I've tried to kind of say, well, we need to move this forward, he will, you know, either change the subject or just it doesn't seem like it's really important to him. And then sometimes, and especially lately, I'm feeling that, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I need to just kind of, you know, maybe I need to walk away from this.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions. There's a big difference between saying, hey, we need to move this forward. In other words, here's what's going to happen and you need to join me in my agenda. And saying, how are you feeling in this relationship? Is this what you want it to be? Is this everything you want? Is this as dynamic and loving as you want it to be? Is our, you know, a level of intimacy what you'd like it to be? You know, is there something more that you'd like from this relationship? Where would you like this relationship to go? In other words, those are actual genuine questions.
That I need to ask myself, or?
Well, no, it sounds like you know where you want to go, but it sounds like you're kind of not sure what's going on inside his head.
Exactly.
And again, what makes it easier, and this isn't going to work for every man in every situation, but what makes it easier is a genuine question asked without an agenda is much less scary to answer than a question that feels like it's really a disguised way of saying, are you going to marry me or not?
Well, that's what I want to say. You know?
Sure. And you know what? You could go there. I mean, I'm not saying don't do that under any circumstances, but I'm saying if you really want to know what's going on with him, that question's unlikely to get you an honest answer.
Well, and then I have to be prepared if he says no, and then, well, then I have to make that choice.
Absolutely. But then at least you're making that choice based on real information. In other words, you're not making that based on you're going inside and making up that he must not want this and therefore I'm going to move on. Or, you know, maybe he does, so I'll hang out just in case. You're actually then going to be able to base it on, okay, this is what's going on for this guy, and I love him, I have the feelings that I have for him, but this is where I want to go in my life, and I've got a decision to make. But it will be based on the reality of the situation, not on the date that you're having with him in your head. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Just in the past, when I've tried to kind of either move things along or see where he's at with it, he's just been very evasive.
Sure, but that key phrase there is move things along.
Right, okay, in either way.
But that's, you know, when you go into it with a very specific agenda, you don't really want to know. It's like somebody saying, do I look fat in this? Okay, they don't want an honest answer. Okay, if you say, you know, so where, you know, how do you feel in this relationship? And it's obvious that what you're really saying is, you know, are you going to marry me or not, or whatever that agenda is, you're unlikely to get an honest answer. Now, that's fine if you don't want one, but you really have to cultivate a genuine curiosity for this other human being that you're looking at sharing your life with. Because honestly, if you're not going to get the communication level up to the point where you can have a real conversation, you know, where you can genuinely inquire into what's going on with him and be prepared for it not to be something that you like, that's not the basis for a great long-term relationship.
That's true.
Because you know what? You know, I know plenty of people who are in long-term relationships and married and have moved their relationship forward, but there's really no basis for it because they're not living with each other. They're sharing space.
Well, that's kind of how I feel that it is. We're just sharing space at this point. And I'm seeing, you know, all my other friends around me. You know, they're having children, they're moving on with their life, and it's, you know, this is just kind of a stagnant thing, and either he's going to want to move on, or after 11 years, you know, I'm going to have to make that decision. So I guess it's just, you're saying I just have to kind of not really get him in a corner, but...
No, in fact, I think the problem you've probably been having, and this is with my guy hat on as much as my coach hat on, is that he feels in a corner whenever you try to have the conversation with him. So if you can let him out of the corner and make your questions authentic. In other words, ask to find out, not to persuade.
Okay.
You'll find that most likely when you're really sincere in asking in that way, you'll find that you'll start to get some answers.
Whether it's the answer I want
whether
or not.
Whether it's the answer you want or not. Yeah, because the thing is if there's a right answer to the question, it's not going to get answered.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I will try that. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate
and please,
it.
Please do. You can check in on the boards at geniuscatalyst.com or phone back in and let me know how it goes.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Victoria in Morrow Bay. Victoria, what can I do for you today?
Well, I'm in a partnership, and my partner uses pornography, and I'm...
To build birdhouses, or... I'm sorry. For what purpose? I mean, just instead of being with you in an intimate way, or just
no,
as well as?
No, as well as. Yeah, I don't feel like there's anything lacking. And I have pain and suffering around it because I interpret it in a certain way. that it feels like it's about me in some way, or mm-hmm. I fear that what he's looking at, I'm not. And so I'm really wanting to see this through eyes of love, or I'm just looking for some kind of help.
Okay. So it's, first off, know if you don't already know that every man I know,
yeah,
with, and I'm sorry to say this, with no exceptions,
yeah,
uses porn in some form or another at some point or another.
Yeah.
So the issue isn't that it's something necessarily deficient in you.
Yeah.
The question is, and it may be, is there a relationship issue beyond that? In other words, is it indicative of something, or is it just that he's a guy?
And I think it's just that he's a guy, because since we've been together, it's actually decreased. This is something he's done for a long, long time.
Okay.
It's just that I'm not understanding my pain. When I really see, there's a time when I look at it and I get that it's just something that he's done, and it's connected to somehow, but it's a strategy that he uses to meet particular needs,
mm-hmm.
and I get myself out of it. I see that, but then there's other times when I just feel afraid, like he's looking at all these younger women, and that somehow that's what he wants, and I'm not that.
Okay, and so I don't know if you can hear, but you sort of are answering your own question. The reason that it's causing all the suffering is because you're using it to mean that there's something deficient and lacking in you.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I think what would be helpful is if I heard from a guy, is it harmful in a relationship, or really can it be absolutely fine?
And
is there a way I can just let it go?
Okay, so you know, we're coming up on a break, so
okay.
Are you okay to hang out over the break?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question going into break that I just want you to think about, and we'll talk about after the break, and then I'll also address that directly. And the question is, what are you afraid might happen if you were completely okay with his using pornography in the way that he does? So don't answer it now.
Okay.
Stick with that. If you want to get in the last segment, the number to call is 1-866-254-1579. That's 1-866-254-1579. We'll be back with more talk on ending relationship conflicts. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you in the next segment.
Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Hello, hello. If you want to get on in this final segment, we're talking about ending relationship conflicts. The number is 1-866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 1-760-918-4300. We're talking to Victoria, and we're talking about porn. And you know, I've got to admit, I used to not even be able to say words like that out loud. And years ago, I wound up starring in, this is to my chagrin, this is going to come out one day, The New Joy of Sex. They made an interactive DVD-ROM version of this, and I was like one of the hosts. I was not one of the active models. But I remember just my audition was having to go into a room and read this list of words, most of which I'd never said aloud before. And just keep a straight face and not blush and giggle. So, you know, I'm doing okay with this now, mostly. but for you, Victoria, so the question I asked you just before the break is, you know, what are you afraid might happen if you were completely okay with his using porn the way that he does?
It's a great question, and I really don't know. I've sat here and I have no clue.
Well, just guess. Make something up.
Okay, if I was to make something up, I would guess that somehow it creates a distance, a safety zone. That's all I can come up with.
Okay, so let's just play with that. Do you feel that there is a distance between you? In other words, you know, how is your intimacy when you're intimate?
Really good.
Okay. So one thing to just recognize is, do you believe that? Do you believe that his doing what he does, do you believe that that really does mean something about you?
No, because there's times I get that it doesn't. It's just that it just stimulates a fear in me.
Okay, so let me then address that directly.
Okay.
Okay, there are really There are two main reasons that I have seen for masturbation, use of porn in relationships from a guy's point of view. And the first is plain old stress relief.
Yes.
You know, there's an old joke about a couple, you know, really embarrassed, couldn't talk about sex, and so they came up with this euphemism about doing the laundry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should we do the laundry tonight, dear?
Right.
Ooh, yes, or there's so one day the guy says, should we do the laundry tonight, dear? And she goes, oh, you know, I'm really tired. Not tonight. And then, you know, about half an hour later, she's thinking about it. She says, oh, you know, what the heck? And she calls him up and she says, honey, you know, I'll help you with the laundry. And he goes, oh, that's okay. It was a small load. I did it myself. You know, so there's an element to it, which is just plain old stress relief.
Yeah.
Now, for all that, you will find people who say, oh, no, it's dangerous. It's this, it's that. And there is an element of it can become addictive.
Yeah, I think there is a quality of addiction to it. And so, that is the part that does scare me.
Okay, so the key thing that you said that makes me think in this case that's not what's going on is that it's decreased since you've been together.
Yes, that's true.
And so that would be something, you know, for him, and again, you know, share this with him.
Yeah.
You know, for him and for you to keep an eye on, to be aware of. But beyond that, I really wouldn't sweat it. Now, there are a couple things that I'm going to ask you to do, though.
Okay.
And one is... And this is going to sound, in the context of this conversation, this is going to sound very odd. And I don't mean it the way that it's going to sound when I first say it.
Okay.
But don't fake your orgasms.
Oh, God, no.
But what I mean is in your communication as well. It's very easy to, you know, say, oh, that's fine, dear, when it isn't. Or to not let to act as if something is pleasing to you or not pleasing to you when it really isn't.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is with the best will in the world, if he really wants to be there for you in the way that you want him there, if he thinks he already is being there in the way, he can't change. He has nothing. He has no way of adapting his behavior because he's not getting direct feedback from you. So, again, you may be doing this already, but I want you to just really put a filter on for that this week.
When I even have a hint of disappointment, it taps into his, there's a lot of shame underneath all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of sensitivity around that. And if I express my disappointment in any way, it really taps into that shame. And, it goes in a direction that, it just doesn't seem like there's an opening between us because he's locked in that place that he goes to so easily with it.
Right. So then in that sense, maybe the nicest thing, the best thing, the kindest thing you can do for yourself in the relationship is to just create a space where it's really okay for him to be how he is.
Yeah.
And just in that area, it's that thing about making the relationship more important than the result.
Yeah.
But the other thing, and I think this is actually going to be the key for you, is to really work on getting in touch with your own sense of well-being, your sense of worth, your sense of yourself as a sexual being.
Yeah.
Because my guess is the difference between the times when it doesn't bother you
mm-hmm.
and the times when it does is how in touch with your own well-being you are that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so really, if you don't already have a practice for that, to really begin to create a practice around each day, each and every day, doing some things, to get in touch with that sense of well-being within yourself, that sense of worth, of inherent worth, that sense of yourself as a worthwhile human being. And that will also then make it much easier for you to simply be with him in the way that allows him to work through whatever he needs to work through. Because, again, it's not like it's all you. But I think of relationships, one of the most useful ways that I think of relationships is they're really, a relationship is a 200% commitment. There's your 100% and there's his 100%, and you can only take responsibility for your 100%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember my wife and I went to a wedding once, and the minister talked about, he was saying that most people think of marriage as a contract. And so under the terms of the contract, both parties have these predetermined obligations, and if either party violates the letter or spirit of the contract's no longer binding and both parties are free to pursue other options. But, at least in the traditional sense, another way of thinking about a commitment, a committed relationship or a marriage is as a covenant. And a covenant is a sacred agreement that you make with yourself and or your God, and it's binding regardless of whether or not the other person decides to keep their half of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you focus on your covenant, whatever that is with yourself, and focus on that well-being, I think you've got the answers. You will find the way of working through this.
Yeah.
Because you're the one in the relationship. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for phoning, Victoria.
Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
Okay. Bye.
I just want to, because we've been talking about marriage, I'll talk about that a little bit more. One of my favorite quotes about marriage comes from McLean Stevenson. He said, "My wife tricked me into marrying her. She told me that she loved me." And I remember watching a show once where Christopher Atkins, he's an actor. He used to be, I think, Blue Lagoon was the first movie with Brooke Shields that I remember seeing him in. And he was being interviewed on TV, and the interviewer asked him what the most important thing he'd learned from being married was. And Atkins replied, "I've learned to mind my own business." And he said it in a really lovely way. And when the host asked him to elaborate, he explained that when he was first married, he kind of tried to take over his wife's life, and he would help her make choices and decisions. And eventually he learned that that was just a recipe for disaster. And he finally learned that for him, success in marriage or in any committed relationship was to do with taking responsibility for his own well-being, his own choices and decisions, and allowing his partner that same freedom. And one reading that I know a lot of people do have at their weddings, but I think it's really beautiful, and I want to share it if you haven't heard it. It comes from the book The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, and it's from a section called On Marriage. And he says, "Then Almitra spoke again and said, 'And what of marriage, master?' And he answered, saying, 'You were born together, and together you shall be forevermore. You shall be together when the white wings of death scatter your days. Aye, you shall be together even in the silent memory of God. But let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone, even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow." So, here's your homework this week. Choose someone with whom you're in an ongoing relationship. It can be a spouse, a partner, a child, or a friend. And spend some time with them this week where your only intention is to love them as they are without trying to change them, help them, or influence them in any way. And I think you'll find something quite magical begins to happen. So I hope you've enjoyed today's show. There are archives of the show at hayhouseradio.com, and I'll particularly point you to, if you enjoyed the kinds of things we were talking on today's show, the show called Give Yourself a Relationship Aha. Next week, we're going to be talking about shifting gears for success, and you can find out more about me at geniuscatalyst.com. This has been You Can Have What You Want. I'm Michael Neal.